Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
It's one of the best ever in the business, and part of that was along the way being here at Penn State, Ernie Accorsi. Ernie, how have you been?
I've been really good, Steve. It's, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's great to be with you. I have to ask you, you were down in Hershey, the Tommy McDonald, Ray Dittinger book turned to play. You were a part of that. What was that experience like?
Well, you know, it's interesting. They trained here from the time I was 11 to the time I was 26, but I was not an Eagles fan. I was a Colts fan. And I went to practice almost every day at one of the two practices. But, you know, I followed them so closely, and Ray has been a great friend. I thought the play was great. I saw it, I think, the second or third night that it premiered in 2017 in Philadelphia, and then saw it 5 years later. I thought it was good then. I thought it was great this time. It was so well produced, so well done. I mean, I don't think there was a dry eye in the house. I told Matt that when I was introduced in Philadelphia as former general manager of the New York Giants, I got booed. And I figured, I hope I don't get booed in my hometown. So, thankfully, I didn't.
I mean, I may announce Penn State games, but I grew up as a lifelong Giants fan. So thank you for everything you did with the Giants, because I appreciated it. How about that?
Well, that's great. I knew I liked you, Steve. I didn't know that part of it, though.
I don't think I ever told you that. Wait, just going way back, what did a guy like, I know you work with Barry Jones and obviously Jim Tarman. What did a guy like Jim mean to you?
You know, I've said this so many times, Steve, and it's not hyperbole by any means. If I don't go to Penn State to work, and I left the Philadelphia Inquirer, I had a good sports writing job, but I always loved administration because I had worked 1 year at St. Joseph's in Philadelphia and loved it. But I always wanted to get back in it. When I went back up there and worked for Jim and was around Joe Paterno, I would have never, without that, I would have never made the National Football League. Jim taught me everything. I mean, when I was at St. Joe's, I just kind of worked out of my back pocket. I had no idea how to be an administrator. He taught me how to be an administrator. He taught me how to be organized, how to conduct myself. I remember when I went up there, I never wore sports coats. Sports writers never wore sports coats. First thing he did to me, he says, "We're going to Jack Harper and get you a navy blue blazer, gray slacks, and a Nittany Lion tie." Okay? and that was my uniform. I mean, everything about not only the specifics of the job, but everything about how to be an executive, I learned from Jim Tarman. I could never repay him. And Joe, you know, was such an inspiration. I mean, he had more important matters than to worry about me. I was about as far down the rung as you possibly could be. But he was so inspiring. I mean, he would not allow anybody to think small. I mean, he was thinking big.
That's right.
And you better think big. And he used to say constantly, you know, someday we're going to be like Texas and Michigan and Alabama and have a big stadium. And I never said a word, but I was thinking to myself, I grew up here. That ain't going to happen. I mean, there are too many different colleges in Pennsylvania. You've got Pitt. You have the Notre Dame fans. And my God, look what's happened. It's exactly how it's developed, and it's just, it's been tremendous. But without my experience at Penn State, I would have never come close to going where I went.
When you're a GM of a team, what are some of the details that are really difficult to deal with that the average fan would never know about that job?
Well, it's, you know, Bill Parcells was a great coach, Hall of Fame coach. He, late in his career, became a general manager. I think it had a different title, but it basically was a general manager in Miami and the Jets. And I remember him saying, you know, this job is different. He said, every day, 10 things happen that you didn't expect to happen. Because you worry about so many details, whether it's the video department or the equipment department, certainly, you know, the players and their health, the coaching staff, you know, the ticket department. I mean, there are so many different little details where I can see why a coach's job is more desirable to these people, because you can go on the field and put your hands on the team and affect pretty much, have a big influence on the outcome of a game. The general manager, the only effect he has on the outcome of the game is what he does in April or what he does in a trade or maybe pick up a player here or there. But you're helpless on game day. And, I mean, there's no job that has more pressure and less control, because you're just sitting – you're at the mercy of what happens on that field. The officials' calls, the coaching decisions. You know, I laugh at this stuff I read about analytics in baseball, where the general managers are setting lineups and affecting. But if I ever want to walk into Tom Coughlin in the middle of a game and said, look, I want you to put so-and-so in right guard, you know, I would have been thrown out of the stadium. I mean, that just doesn't happen in football. But there's so many little details, Steve, that come to your office. And you know, I wanted to know what was going on, so it wasn't like, don't bother me with that. I think it was most my responsibility. So I wanted to know everything that was going on in that locker room.
And everybody obviously knows, you know, well, they may not obviously know, but with the John Elway situation, and you ended up getting an awesome player in Chris Hinton out of the deal with Denver. What did that experience of being in Baltimore then maybe set you up to really become even a better general manager down the road because you had that experience?
Well, I was thrust into that job in the middle of mini camp, and Irsay came into my office. I was the assistant general manager. He said, I just fired Dick Szymanski. Do you want the job? I was in shock. I mean, the team was practicing in the field in minicamp. He said, if you don't take it, I'm firing you. So I it's not the way I wanted to have a general manager's job, particularly there with that situation. Right. So I fell into it, and now all of a sudden I'm stuck with first pick in the draft, and the player doesn't want to play there. Now, I didn't make that trade. That trade was made by the owner. I found out on ESPN. I was watching an NBA playoff game. I was not going to trade him, because I felt sooner or later, you know, if he's hitting 250 in double A in Greensboro and riding a bus in July, he's coming to camp for $5 million, okay? So I wasn't going to trade him. But I thought that when now that happened, Steve, I thought this is going to – I was 41 years old, and I said, this is going to wreck my career. I didn't think I would be able to overcome it. It was really a difficult thing to overcome. And then I left there. When I was stuck with the fact that he made that trade without me knowing about it, I left right as soon as that season ended and went to the Cleveland Browns.
I don't blame you. I mean, you know, when he made you general manager, you at least get more. I mean, you kept your job, but did you at least get more money out of it?
I got less. No,
I'm
not
perfect.
No, I'm not lying. I was making, I think, $43,000 a year, and I had an Exxon credit card that he had given me that I could use for, you know, just for gas, but at least and he said, oh, by the way, I want that card back too. So actually I got a pay cut. No, it was not a blue ribbon job, a blue chip job, but I didn't have any choice. I earned my spurs through that, but it was some experience.
What was it then like to work with the Maras and with Lauren and with the Tisch family?
Well, that was, you know, I'm glad I had that at the end of my career, because I don't think I could have ever matched it. They were so great. I mean, you know, Mr. Mara, I was there every day. Bob Tisch came in once a week. He couldn't have been nicer to me. And, you know, he used to walk in, Bob Tisch, and he'd say, you know, I know less football than anybody in this room. I mean, here was a multi-billionaire, and, you know, a mega force and Postmaster General of the United States. And he had that kind of humility. Well was involved with the team. He had been the sole drafter of the team in the 50s, built that 56 championship team, and was in my office every day. And it was like working for a history book. And he was just so supportive. You know, even if he didn't agree with everything, and there were some things he didn't, and certainly I was going to do what he wanted, he would say, "Oh, you go do what you think is right." And the minute that you did something that maybe he wasn't in favor of to start with, he would support it 100%, no matter how much criticism I got in the media. But it was a dream job working there, and I'm so happy I had it. at the end of my career.
How tough is it when in your gut you know you've done it right, but you do get criticized in the media because you can't really avoid it? How tough is that, or is the backbone become solidified over time because your gut tells you it's right?
You never really get used to it. I mean, I didn't mind it as much myself as I have three children and a grandchild, and when they saw me criticized, that bothered me. And in the early years, if you didn't live in the town you were working, like my kids were in college and I was working in Cleveland, if they didn't see the papers, I felt pretty good. But with social media, everything that's written about you is available for everybody. But when I made the Eli trade, I really got hammered for that trade. And I remember being in the elevator coming back from down in the press box. He had just thrown three interceptions. People got on the elevator, didn't see me. I was in the back. They were coming from the suites. And one guy was just ripping me to shreds. And I was standing in the back hoping he didn't turn around. And he was saying, "Now we don't have any draft choices. This guy can't play." But, you know, when you get vindicated, that makes it all the sweeter, of course. I never lost faith in him. I knew the quarterback struggled. Elway struggled. I mean, almost everybody did. But Roethlisberger as much, or Marino, but most of them did. And I knew that if we could just support him with a supporting cast, I knew that he could win for us, and he sure did.
Well, Peyton did too his first year. They were like 3-13 their first year.
Yeah, I think Aikman won one game.
Aikman won one.
Yeah. I always read the story about how Elway came out of the huddle and lined up behind the right guard.
Yes, and the guard.
The guard said, I don't have the ball, John. The guy on my left has the ball. But you know, it's another world out there because it's like turning the speed up three times when you go from college to the pro, because to the pros, because everything happens faster, and it's the rare player who can master it, you know, as soon as he steps in.
Phillip Rivers obviously is a terrific quarterback. He's got an excellent shot at being in the Hall of Fame. But what was it? I know Eli didn't want to play for the Chargers. I got it. But what was it that you looked at and said, "Yeah, I'd rather have him, even though I know he's really good"?
Well, we had the fourth pick.
Yep.
And I had pretty much convinced that we were not going to be able to move up to get Eli, because every time I offered something, A.J. Smith turned it down, and I didn't know him very well, and he said, "I'll call you on Friday," and he never called. We were picking Roethlisberger. We weren't picking Rivers. And there was Larry Fitzgerald was ahead of us, and the Raiders picked a guard from Iowa, which saved us, because that was at least going to give us Roethlisberger. So that was already – in fact, we had Roethlisberger written down on a card. I had been tipped by a media member, a national media member. He said, "Don't jump. Use your whole 15 minutes, because AJ's strategy is going to hold your feet to the fire with about 5 minutes to go and call you and ask for O.C. Unamanure, who was our prime pass rusher, which I was not giving up." So I held. But I had Roethlisberger's name written down, and he called, and he said, "But I want OC." I said, "You've not gotten OC, so they said, "Would you give next year's number one?" Which we had already decided we would do that. So I did, and now I had to pick a player for him, Steven. If he backed out after I picked that player and drafted him, I had the player. The league will not allow you to pick a player for another team. You have to pick him, and then you can trade him. And I said, "Who do you want?" He said, I want Rivers." Well, you know, I didn't dislike Rivers, but Roethlisberger was clearly my second choice. And I just held my breath until that TWX thing, it was a computer message, was accepted by the league. The trade was made, and then I had Eli. But that's how close. I wasn't going to draft Rivers. I picked him for the Chargers.
Right. I knew that. I knew.
Yeah, I liked him, but I just like I felt he I just had him rated third. Our whole organization had him rated third among those three guys.
And I remember Robert Gallery was the guy picked by the Raiders.
Gallery.
The tackle from Iowa. And to be honest with you, Ernie, because he played against Penn State, so Jack Ham and I are doing the games. We're like, Gallery's the second overall pick?
I know.
I mean, the two of us were like, you've got to be kidding me, because we didn't really like him.
You know, it's funny. I was standing at the elevator ready to go to a game after we had Eli. We were playing the Raiders, and Al Davis was in a wheelchair. He was pretty ill at the time. And we were going up, getting on the elevator together. He said, now I got to go up and watch your quarterback tear us apart and look at that guard we picked. And I'm like, thank God, because that at least gave me a backup plan with Roethlisberger. I mean, the Raiders, you know, they didn't have a guaranteed quarterback. They could have picked Roethlisberger right there. And yeah, then I would have really had a tough decision.
Because Jack and I were watching, because, you know, they played Penn State. And so Jack and I were doing the game. And the two of us are like, and then when the draft came up, Jack calls me up. He says, explain that to me. And I said, I can't.
So, I know, yeah.
And we're not, I'm not a professional evaluator, but I can tell if somebody's good or not.
Well, I mean, he was good, but, you know, the impact that a quarterback has,
yeah,
now, you better be right on that quarterback, but the impact that a quarterback has compared to, an interior lineman, I mean, it's not the same. Not that they're not important. It's just not the same.
Yeah. But, yeah, but you picked Snee in the second round. I mean, so you made Coughlin eventually happy. No. So
yeah. Yeah, that's right. Turned out to be his son-in-law. But
son-in-law.
We were going to pick him anyway. Yeah.
But it's a nice backstory.
No, what it is.
It's absolute pleasure. I think the last time I even saw you, I think, was when you came up on the Honor Gym with the press box thing. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I want to tell you one thing, Steve, before you go. For years, I've turned the sound down on the television and listened to you. When I was in New York on XM, you and Jack, I loved listening to you. And it went back to Fran and George Paterno. This year, for some reason, Comcast has got a two-play delay. Now, the Internet's burning up over it, I guess, because a lot of people have been doing this. And I don't know why, if they did it intentionally or not, but, I mean, there was always a little bit of a delay, but it didn't affect how the sequence of the game. But now...
Yeah, we're way ahead from what I understand. So somebody told me the Purdue game, like, I was doing the next play, and they were just starting the play before that.
It's terrible. It's not just a play. It's two plays.
And it's
just Comcast, because I have friends of mine that have subscribed to other cable companies, and they're current. Yeah. So I don't know what – people have contacted Comcast, and they have not – replied, so I don't have any idea why they did it or if they realized they did it, but that's
interesting. That's because I've had a couple people say that to me, and I just make the joke I'm clairvoyant. But yeah, because now they're doing Learfield's putting out something, and you need your DVR to do this. It's called Sync My Game, where you can sync it up to the radio, but you got to use the DVR to do that. Whatever.
Yeah, God, good luck with me.
I just talk. Can't do the other parts.
Well, I still listen, because you guys do a great job. And tell Jack I said hello. He's always my favorite.
In fact, I'm going to see Jack in about 35 minutes here. So
great.
Appreciate that. I'll definitely tell him you said hi. He'll appreciate it a lot.
My pleasure, Steve. I enjoyed being with you.
Hey, Ernie, it was great. Thanks so much. That was a fun conversation.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.